I started writing this series about 20 years ago, but I didn't publish the first one until maybe 14 years ago. And it was about my experiences up here in northern Michigan. In the early years, I was living in Metro Detroit. But this area of Michigan, Leelanau, Grand Traverse, Benzie, has been a big part of my life from the time I was a teenager. And I needed a protagonist, so I came up with a local sheriff. And so the series has been about this local sheriff, mostly in Leelanau County, but I combine all of the locales to have a wider palette, and the various things that he confronts. Part of it has to do with place. The lakes up here, as you know, are just so amazing. So place is always a character, but it's also the differences in people and economics that play an important part in the sociology of this whole region. So that's what it's been about from the beginning. The local people, the people who come and visit, people of great affluence, people who are relatively poor, and how this all mixes together in a social drama of sorts.
And Cedar County, you've placed it alongside Lake Michigan. Is that more or less based on Traverse City, where you're located now?
Well, it's really Leelanau County.
Okay. Okay.
Which is just north of Traverse City.
All right. And I'm wondering, too, you're surely aware of Joe Haywood. I thought about him as I was reading your book. There's some similarities there in what you're doing.
Yes, I'm very familiar with his work.
And I was wondering if you do anything similar in the sense that, you know, Joe likes to ride along with the DNR and the UP when he gets his story ideas. Is that something about how you get your story ideas? Is there anybody that you interact with in real life? Or how do you do the research?
Over the years, I've gotten to know a lot of people in law enforcement and have had the chance to ride with some of them. And that really makes a difference. To see what they confront on a daily basis has really changed my perceptions of what law enforcement does.
I'm sure it would. So now let's focus a little bit more on this eighth book, the brand new one, Murder in the Merlot. And maybe you can tell us about how that idea came about. And I'm wondering, how many glasses of wine does one drink for research as writing?
Well, I have this awful confession to make.
Oh, good.
I used to really love to drink wine, but it somehow it doesn't agree with me anymore. So, yes, it's a tragic story. I spent a lot of time going to the various wineries. I think at last count we have 36 or 38 or maybe 40. It's such an important part of the local economy in Leelanau, and it's expanding to other places in the region. And I've gotten to know some of the wine producers over the years, and the person I spent the most time with is Larry Mauby, who was one of the first people who started growing grapes and started making wine. He then moved on to making sparkling wine or champagne, but he's sort of the grandfather of the industry, or one of them anyway. And I got a sense of what he does, and he was very kind in terms of, you know, we started in the vineyard and moved from there to the crusher and all of the various aspects of winemaking. So that gave me a good background of how we do it locally. But I also got interested in what was going on internationally. And the wine industry, much like the book industry, is really controlled by four or five international corporations. I'm not talking about our local wine industry, but the worldwide wine industry is controlled by these major companies that make wine. They also own the distilleries. They own the breweries. I mean, they are these large multinational companies. And so the idea I was playing with was, what would happen if one of those international companies would come into a local area? What would they do to our industry? And what would the tensions be? You know, and there's an old joke up here, if you haven't lived here for three or four generations, you're never going to be really part of the community. So I, you know, there's all this suspicion of new people coming in. But then there's also a fear of major corporations and you know, the dominance of big financial forces. So that's what I was trying to work into the book.
Did you learn about Michigan wines? And what I'm hearing lately is that we're becoming comparable to some of the best wines out there.
I think that that's happening. And the person I mentioned, Larry Mauby, certainly has been a leader in that. In the early days, he couldn't grow reds. So they couldn't grow reds generally in this area because it was too cold. But with the climate change, people are able to produce red wines. And that's an area of real interest. And we are producing good white wines and red wines that are becoming better and better as we can produce those grapes.
So I'm thinking about the book as I read it, and, you know, it's one of those, of course, as you might expect with mysteries, that you're going to sit on the edge of your seat to find out what happens next. And I have to tell you, I am now afraid to start a boat. Well, without giving things away, there's some explosions in there.
I should always open the engine compartment and check for possible explosives.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching for that from now on, yeah. So, mysteries, and is this most of your writing? You've done some shorter pieces as well, but what is it about crime mysteries that so intrigues you? Have you ever wanted to move to another type of writing, or this is you? This is your place?
Well, it's funny. I sort of stumbled upon it. I taught college English for close to 40 years. Mm-hmm. I never read any popular fiction because I was always reading the things that I was teaching and working on and reading background. And I hurt my back one year and was actually, you know, put in bed for a month. And a friend of mine brought me a copy of Elmore Leonard's Freaky Deaky. And I asked my wife to go down to the bookstore and just buy everything that had Elmore Leonard on the spine. And the books were so much fun. I mean, I just loved it. And then friends started suggesting other authors. So I started working in that genre, reading in that genre, with the idea, first of all, that I would probably start teaching some courses in crime fiction, which I have never quite gotten around to. But I really got interested in the various writers and what they do. And then I thought, maybe I could try to do this, but it was more just for fun. I started writing crime scenes, you know, bumping various people. And then when I had a big collection of crime scenes, I wrote some connecting text and put it together. And that was the first book, Summer People. And then it was done. And, you know, I was done with that. I had accomplished that. And I wasn't really planning on writing another one. But the bookstore started pestering me for another one, and then another one, and then another one. And I just finished the ninth one a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, you have? Any hints that you can give us about what we're going to see next?
Well, it's written about November. Up here, the gales of November are very famous because the lake is still warm. And when we get these big Arctic blasts, we get the worst storms of the year. And so I have this complicated story where we start out with a group of kids who are on a camping trip in the Upper Peninsula in 1990 who get stranded in one of these gales. And then they come back in 2015 for a class reunion. But there are some very awful things that happened on that first trip that are revisited at the class reunion.
Intriguing. You're a kayaker also. Is that a time that you meditate on plots, or is that your time to get your mind completely clear of things?
It's a really important part of my almost everyday life. I do relax as soon as I hit the water, and I love to paddle, especially on the big lakes, Michigan and Superior. But I do work out plots, not that I go out with the idea that I'm going to do that, but if I had been working all day and then I hit the water, things just start coming to me. And it's a really important part of my creative life also.
Yeah, I expected you to say something along those lines. Mystery Writing Workshop, the basics of crime writing, you teach that as well. Can you give us some lessons about what does a writer need to know about crime writing that may not apply to other types of writing?
Well, crime writing is mostly about plot, but also about character. But when someone opens a crime book, they expect to be carried along by action. And so when I teach that particular course, I try to teach the concept that these stories are just scenes, like a movie, and we go from scene to scene to scene to scene, but also we have main plot and subplots, because readers want to know about characters. In my books, people want to know about the sheriff, and they have spent so much time with the sheriff if they've read the series, so they're always interested in what he's doing. And then I also try to create a storyline for the antagonist to see what's going on in their heads. And so it's a combining of those various plot lines that seems to make crime fiction work.
And now I'm going to let you plug your own show, because you work on the radio as well. You're the host of Michigan Writers on Air. Tell us about that show.
Well, the show started, I can't believe this, maybe 12 years ago.
Mm.
And it's on Interlochen Public Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually have two interviews and then a commentary with a well-known local poet, Fleeta Brown, on the program.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've done like 250 interviews in the last 10 or 12 years.
Wow, that's really neat. Any more memorable than others, or is that not a kind thing to ask?
Well, some of them have been amazing. You get such a variety of people. Some of them are very famous, and some of them are virtually unknown. They're, writers who have very limited distribution, but everyone's got a story to tell.
Yeah.
And to create an environment where people can tell that story and tell that story about their book or their poems or whatever has just been an exciting opportunity for me.
You know, you've been doing this longer than I have, Aaron. I wonder, are you seeing a commonality in Michigan writers or not?
I'm seeing a lot of change. When I started, there weren't so many locally published authors. I want to rephrase that. There weren't so many authors locally who had published. And with the change in the internet and self-publishing, there's been this huge group of people who now have access to print and access to an audience. And so that's really given me a wider group of people to talk to.
So as we wind this up, do you have a publication date yet for number 9?
I went out to my editor yesterday morning, and she's going to have it for several weeks. And then it sort of depends on what she says.
How much time do you usually take between books? Is it like one a year or...?
Well, it was one a year for a while, and then I ran into, some personal health issues, and I slowed down a lot. And I'm also slowing down a lot in my own writing. I can just see that. I just spend so much time at the sentence level, and I'm not moving as quickly as I used to. But as soon as I finish a project, I'm on to another project.
Yeah. No breaks between, eh?
Yeah. I'm thinking maybe I should take a month off to build a kayak, but...
really? You build boats?
I think I've built 9 boats now in the last 10 or 12 years.
Oh, wow. That's... What kind?
They're Greenland-style kayaks.
They're all kayaks?
They're all kayaks, yeah. They're all small, thin boats that roll well and they're very much like the Inuits built years ago.
Is that part of the attraction for you, that they have this history?
Absolutely. These people had limited resources, and what they were able to achieve, it's about as different from our culture as anything can be.
All right. Was there anything you wanted to add that I didn't ask?
No, you did a very thorough job. Thank you very much.
All right.
Well, I'm not used to being on the other side.
I'd rather be on this side, Aaron. Just don't ask me anything. All right, Aaron. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
So how long have you been in this country?
I was born here. My parents came here during World War II when the Soviet Army occupied Latvia. But my first language was Latvian, and I learned English as they sent me off to public school. And you can debate whether that's abusive or whether it's a wonderful thing, because back then it takes 2 months to talk language, a new language. So I think actually we're missing our window of opportunity. We need to teach students languages in elementary school, not high school.
Absolutely. We know that. Yeah. Because my family mostly came at the turn of the last century.
Mm.
And anyone who stayed in Latvia was murdered by Hitler.
And where did your family come from?
Riga.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Oh, my gosh. Okay, now tell me about that. Now I'm really intrigued.
Well, we don't know anything about the people who stayed in Riga because early in the war, when the Nazis took over, they were all marched outside of the city and murdered.
Yeah.
Part of the family...
So what's your ethnic background, Aaron?
Well, I can tell you, my father's side were Jews, and I don't know how, there was a big diaspora where the Jews of Spain and other parts of southern Europe ran north to Poland because there was less persecution there.
Yeah.
And then they were pushed into Latvia. There was this whole, and then my grandmother and my great aunts told me about the pogroms and how afraid they were of the Russians.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why they started to leave Latvia around the time of World War I.
I see. I had no idea that was in your background. What an interesting discovery. Have you ever traveled over there?
No, my brother has. And before I left college teaching, I had a young woman who was Latvian, mm-hmm. who was Jewish. And she was talking about her grandmother. And I said, well, how did your grandmother survive? And she said, my grandmother was a sharpshooter for the Russian army.
Wow.
How's that for a story?
Oh, you've got to get that into a book somehow. I don't know if that fits in with Ray Elkins, but oh my goodness, that's fascinating.
Incredible story.